Good evening, one and all. I know, whizzing through another month, nearly halfway through February. And of course, we've got Valentine's coming up, got my birthday coming up as well, if it matters that much. But I keep telling the Americans that we get this special dispensation in England that when we get to 50, we start going backwards. So, I'm going backwards quite quickly these days. Anyway, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the things we have, we talk about is the way things develop. We often bring up the fact that if you look at Star Trek, for instance, and you see Star Trek, which was a futuristic, you had sliding doors. Well, nearly everywhere's got sliding doors these days. You had communicators, mobile phones. We have captain's log, tablets, all that sort of stuff. But it's not just in the sort of science world. It's the medical side of things as well. I can remember, for instance, I was actually working in Harefield when the first heart transplant took place there. And a little tiny village, and you couldn't hardly get through the village because of all the press and the newspapers and that going there. But it's changed. I mean, the whole business of, if you go back to Burke and Hare and the body snatching, but when we started having that, you had the cards that you could donate your organs and everything like that. Now it's commonplace. I've sort of got AFib surgery coming up. You know, you go back sort of 5-10 years ago, whatever, that was pretty, you know, not that common. Nowadays, it's nothing. You're in and out, you know. Anyway, my guest, she has been able to put the two loves of her life together and produce, well, this is now her second, and we're just talking about beforehand, there's actually four at least coming down the pipeline sort of thing. Anyway, the second book, where she manages to mix medicine with thrillers. So we get medical thrillers. Well, we'll find out a bit more about that, because on the show today, I have the one and only Dr. Christina Laporte. Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, and I'm so grateful that you have me on your show.
It's a pleasure. Now, you know, as we were talking before, I mean, you studied in Italy initially, and then moved across to do your doctorate, your first part in America, and been here, what, 40 years, you were saying? Where did it sort of come in with the sort of love of thriller and thriller writing and managing to get the basically medical thrillers out there? So was this just that you decided to put your two loves together and came up with it, or what?
Well, the story is actually different from most author. Most author would tell you, I always like to write and this and that. Well, it's not my story. I actually hated writing assignments when I was in school in Italy.
Uh-huh.
My passion for writing developed much later, after I finished medical school, after I came to the United States, and after I practiced internal medicine for about 20 years. I just had almost like a midlife crisis. I wanted to do something different. And I tried to get into the cardiology specialty, because cardiology is my favorite specialty. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do so. But while I was waiting, because it was not easy to match the program, I was reading different things and expanding my interests. And I came across a nonfiction book called The Art of Fiction by the author Ayn Rand.
Uh-huh.
And among all this, you know, the famous novels, she wrote this nonfiction book. And it's a short book. And I was just fascinated by the fact that an author can create a world, enter this world, and then invent characters that she wants to meet, and then make anything happen. You know, you can make
right,
anything happen
in your
novels. And you're in your own world.
Yep.
So if you're a writer, of course you know. And so I decided to start writing. And of course I had some obstacle, because I didn't have any formal training in writing, so I had to get a writing coach, and I had to get, you know, several editors. And of course, you know, then I discovered the writing was, you know, the easy part, and getting published was the hard part.
Right.
But I chose, of course, you know, the world I knew as my world, the medical world. And of course, if you think about it, I love thrillers. I always loved thrillers. I read thrillers all the time. And so the medical world is really an ideal backdrop for thrillers because it deals with life or death all the time. So that's the highest stake you can have, right? And especially cardiology field. And there are a lot of overlaps between a doctor and an author of thrillers. For example, the pressure of time.
Mm.
There is the pressure of time with the doctor and the pressure of time in thrillers. And then the ability to read people, to create characters or to make a diagnosis. So because of all this, I ended up choosing this genre. I never had any doubts about my genre.
Because obviously, you know, with your own sort of real life experiences as a cardiologist, it gives you that depth that you know the realism. You know what it's like.
Right.
And I see. You also bring in a Sicilian mobster, don't you? Is that sort of links?
Yes, I chose a cybercrime as the best things happening in this book due to shortage of organs.
Mm.
I chose cybercrime because it's a modern thing. You know, we have great medical records, electronic medical records, and they're great. They're very helpful, but they are vulnerable. And I was doing research about that because I didn't know much about the cyber world. I found out that in 2023, 1.5 million records were exposed just for a glitch in a computer medical record of the organ association, you know, the association that deals with organ distribution. It's just incredible how vulnerable this is.
And of course, obviously, I mean, that's just what we know. I mean, you know, we hear about, and obviously it's in your book as well, the amount of black market there is for organ, organ items, etc.
It's really incredible. I was doing research about that, and they calculated $1.7 billion
in
the world in 2023 to pay for organ acquired illegally. And all this could be actually prevented if we increase the number of organs, and there are ways, for example, to increase. There are controversial way, but that they should be explored, for example, paying the donors, paying the family.
Yeah.
And today is illegal.
Yeah.
It's punishable by $50,000 and 5 years of prison.
I mean, and they're doing this. See, ears they've grown on mice or something like that. They're doing sort of like creating false organ things like ears and stuff like that. But again, you get into this whole ethics part, I guess it is,
right.
And you must, I'm sure in your book, you know, that's one of the things you sort of come across, the ethics of the whole business with organs.
There are also good things. For example, in my book I describe a very new, relatively new process of transporting a heart, which I was not even aware of yet when I was actually doing research for the book. And it's called heart in a box. You know, in the past, we were used to bring out, you know, to carry the organs, the heart, to transplant in a cooler. Like you go to a picnic, right?
Exactly, kind of
The white cooler.
Yeah.
And it would take only, you know, you could transport a heart that way for 4 hours, and that'd be gone. And today we have this box, and the box has tubes, and the tubes connect to the heart or the extracted organ, the extracted heart, and it perfuses this heart with fluid, which is hot, warm, and nourishing, like blood, and the heart starts beating again in the box. And you can move, and you can bring it around and transport it for about 12 hours. So that has greatly expanded the ability to match someone, for example, across the country, and you could just fly the heart there, which was not really possible to do before.
Right.
So there are good things also that are happening, but they're not sufficient to really make up for the number of hearts which are
indeed. What about the whole impact about donors around the world? Is it, I guess, the attitudes in places around the world are totally different to the whole organ thing and everything like that. Is it sort of spreading, on the good way, or is there still sort of a total, areas in the world that just don't have these options?
Well, of course, the third world countries and all that, they're not going to be as up to speed as the United States. I mean, I think the United States is still probably in the lead. We perform about 4,000 transplants or heart transplants mm-hmm. every year. But in the list, we have 8,000. But we could have a lot more because the doctors list only people who are like moribund. Because if they list other people, they know they're not going to get a heart. They barely have heart for the people who are dying. So if we had more hearts, many more people could be transplanted who actually could benefit because they're not having a good life, even though yeah. they're not dying tomorrow.
Right.
So,
Yeah, I mean, as I said at the beginning, you sort of look back last 20, 30, 40 years and how medicine has grown. Just take hysterectomy, for instance. Hysterectomy. Woman used to be in hospital for a week, couldn't do anything to that. Now they're in and out.
Home the same day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh. It's amazing. Same with eye surgery and all that sort of stuff. But we're still, despite all this, we're still really learning every day on new things. But you've got to be able to have the finance and the facilities to do this this discovery.
Yes, and it's not only that, but unfortunately, the history of medicine it's been hindered constantly. If you think about it, I mean, you couldn't perform autopsy. Performing autopsy was a sin in the medicine.
Yes, yes, yes.
And when anesthesia came out, they denigrated anesthesia.
They wouldn't allow to have it. I know.
They bashed anesthesia. And, in cardiology, they thought that if you stick a catheter into a vein or an artery, you would drop dead.
Yeah.
I mean, a doctor in 1929, a heroic cardiologist, had to stick a urinary catheter inside his vein and thread it to the heart and then run down to get an x-ray to show that you actually could do that.
Wow.
And then it opened the door to cardiac caths,
catheterization,
and the stents and all these other things, which before were unimaginable. But medicine has been barred by all these ethical dilemmas from the very, very beginning, and some of them have really hindered progress. And right now, for example, there is the thing with xenotransplantation, animal.
Yeah.
We can modify genes and there's a whole group of people who are against that because it's bad for the animals.
Yeah.
So everything is always kind of a fight uphill in medicine.
Right, indeed. Now, the medical part of your book, Change of Heart, is only part of it because it is a thriller, and we're introduced to Kirk Miner, who's basically a new FBI person, is he?
Kirk Miner is actually a private investigator.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of Charlotte, sorry.
And then he works with Charlotte, Bloom, who's a newbie FBI agent who was in her last 3 months of her probation, and she's a cyber specialist, and she's starting to have cardiac problems, with fluttering in her chest and dizziness, and she has to keep it a secret because she can't possibly reveal something like that, that they would just put her behind a desk. She wouldn't be able to go in the field, and complete her training, and then she is having a little bit of a romance with a heart doctor. So she has to hide a heart condition from
the heart doctor. Oh, my God. don't make things hard at all, will we?
No.
But there's one of the things that they discover, and this is what we were talking about the black market, is this organ donation chain, which we know is there. I mean, people know. I mean, it's not unknown.
Well, the chain is really, I got the idea of the chain from something that's actually legally and good, and it has to do with kidneys. There is a donation chain for kidneys right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need a kidney, and you don't have relatives who match you, but they have relatives who are willing to donate a kidney, you can join the chain with your relative, and then they're going to match the relative with another patient, and hopefully they'll find another relative from another patient to match you. So that's done with the kidneys. But you see, with the heart, you can't do a chain with the heart because you have to die, obviously. You know, the problem with the
heart
is that you have to hope for somebody to die.
Yeah, slightly different. I mean, you know, you can manage with one kidney.
But I apply that because obviously there is a very big conflict of interest immediately, and I could write a whole plot around it.
Right. Within your own realm, what do other doctors and physicians, what have you, professors, think of your stories? Do they, you know, appreciate that you actually know what you're talking about, unlike some people who write these books?
Yes, my colleagues, the ones I talk to, like my books and love my books, and they're very supportive. Well, you know, if I don't know something, like I'm a cardiologist, so I am a medical person, and so I picked up the phone and I asked some of the, you know, to check out some of the details with my friend, a heart transplant surgeon, of course. So I'm trying to be very, very accurate in what I write.
Right. And of course, go ahead.
I had to do a lot of research for the cyber part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was, you know, I don't know anything about it, and it was kind of funny. The only thing that Charlotte Bloom was doing was Googling a lot, you know. And so
right.
Finally the editor said, well, she's a cyber specialist. She must be doing something a little bit more than that, you know.
Right.
So, like, you know, I had to read about hacking and all the other things, and with all the language,
yep.
The cyber language.
Indeed.
You know.
But one of the other things that you must come, you know, obviously in your own work as well, and I know it's part of in the book, is the impact, not just the medical, but the psychological impact for recipients and donors when we get into this whole organ transplant stuff. That must be, it's hard to even comprehend how that can be.
Because if you think about it, some family haven't even come to grips with the fact that somebody very close to them is dying or dead already.
Right.
And unfortunately, there is a time pressure here. They have to make a decision whether or not to donate the organs. That's why I think it's better if the doctor who has a patient maybe asks for the organ. Like today, believe it or not, there is a committee with disinterested committing that requests consent, gets consent. And so there is almost no relationship between, no bond between the family of the donor and the patient. That's another thing that could actually help, I think, increase the donation. If a doctor could actually vouch for the patient.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
Request for the consent. But it's considered, that's to be a purely altruistic, disinterest donation. I mean, why? Why not compensating, for example? We pay for sperm, we pay for eggs.
Yeah.
Donor,
yeah.
You know, we pay for a lot of things already. It's not
unheard of. Indeed, it is. One of the other things, I guess, writing a book like this is it enables you to almost give virtual tours of transplant hospitals within the books and educate people within these hospitals and the sort of what the transplant programs are and that. Is that something you've made a sort of a mental effort to share with the reader?
Well, I have always tried to keep in mind that the purpose of a novel is really not to teach or to convince you of anything. It's to entertain.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean a novel cannot be about something important.
Exactly, yes.
And of course, you know, but it's very important to concretize that into the story. For example, So the author has an idea, and then it has to be completely concretized into the action of the characters. So then the reader reads what's happening, and then forms his own conclusion and comes to the idea, the original idea maybe of the author, and also get his own, you know, form his own opinion about it. But it's an active process in the part of the reader. It's not just passively absorbing stuff, you know, from right. the author. It's very important that there is like a circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the idea to the concretization, and from the concrete in the novel to the idea. And half of it is the author, and half of it is done by the reader.
Right. Yeah, I always say, I mean, we get a lot of people have written books about, say abuse, you know, religious sexual abuse or something like that.
Right.
And when somebody writes a novel, the person reading it puts themselves into the place of the character. They can see themselves in it, rather than these sort of six things to make your life better type books. So right. I always believe that having a book, having in a novel that's not just a story, but it makes people think as well.
Absolutely.
It's a
well
great
written,
thing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. If the author has put themselves into the character,
yes,
and so the character are three-dimensional, then the reader can do the same, and they can absorb all the ideas, but not in a, like teaching kind of way, but just in a, you arrive to your conclusion as you read the story.
Indeed. What about, yeah. I mean, the few, yeah, obviously, yeah, we've touched on bits and pieces, and you mentioned that heart box, which I think is a wonderful thing. The future of transplant medicine, are you able to sort of touch on any of the things that are being worked on or that people don't realise exists that, you know, is coming along perhaps in the next 5 years or something like that within the book?
Well, the heart in the box, it's pretty new, and so that's one of the things. I don't really go to, I mean, I think in the future, but, well, you know, I'm talking about a mechanical heart,
yep.
which, you know, but it kind of exists already. It's not completely independent. You can't unplug it and walk around, you know,
to
charge it. But so maybe in the future we would have that, or in the future, I think we could probably create organs in the lab.
I'm sure that, well, I know it's already been done. Yeah,
I mean, we can probably grow hearts.
Yeah.
They are growing, actually, I think, valves already.
Right. I know the ears. I remember seeing the ears. But yeah, yeah.
It's almost like the 3D printing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's where the future is going to be.
Yeah,
organic art. I mean, 3D printing.
Got to be on organs, indeed. It's something. Now, obviously, people hear about 3D printing and the sort of bad side of it. You know, the sort of print your own gun sort of thing and stuff like that. But there is all this other good stuff that we can do, that we can develop. You know, this whole side. I mean, you look at. 5 years ago, diabetes, people were still having to do their injections, do their checks, cut the finger. Yeah. Now you get these pumps. Yeah, these pumps are there. I mean,
and then you get a watch. They tell you what the sugar is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's
you
right. The watches
watch
are out. Yeah.
Thing on.
Yeah.
You don't have to stick anything.
No, exactly. It is, as I said, this is the second book, and we talked beforehand. You've got a couple more, which is sort of ready and stuff like that. What sort of reception are the books received?
Well, the one that's out since 2022, Dissection, was received very well. It was number one political thriller on Amazon, number
nice.
Two medical thriller on Amazon. Even the UK, it reached, like, I think, number two or something in Canada, Amazon Canada and Amazon Australia.
Great.
It did very, very well on Amazon. So I'm very happy. I had a lot of very important author blurbs, like Lee Child, the blurb for that, Tess Gerritsen. So I was very happy with my first book.
That's
and this
great.
Is a sequel, but you can read independently.
Yeah.
because it's only they're the same kind of the same two characters are in both books, but and the new protagonist Bloom is a small character, you know, minor character in Dissection, and he becomes the protagonist in Change of Heart because in Dissection she helped Mulville save the world.
Right.
So Mulville asked her, "Do you want to be an FBI agent when you finish your college? Give me a call." And if, obviously she did, and now in Change of Heart she is.
Well, it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you, Christina. Learning, you know, I love why I do these shows. That's why I've been doing them for 20 odd years. You learn so much, even, you know, just by sort of talking to authors, talking to somebody with your experience and stuff like that. And I love all that. But what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show to Christina. To you, to have you tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books. So over to you.
Sure. Yes, so I have a web page, and the web page is Christina without an H, Christina, Leport, Leport. So you can check out my web page. I have a lot of blogs about Italy, about food, about holidays, beside the medical blogs.
Right.
And then you can obviously go to Amazon and you can purchase my books on Amazon or in the bookstores, but of course in England they'll probably be on Amazon.
Right, indeed. Well, Christina, it is absolutely fantastic chatting to you, and you know, let's hope the future is what we hope it's going to be, and a lot of this can be improved on, and a lot of people I'm sure will read your book and find it really not just thrilling but also educational as well. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It was my, a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go, my guest today, Christina, that's without an H, Christina Leport, Leport. And we've been talking about her latest book, Change of Heart, a medical thriller. So it's got bits of everything, romance, thrillers, about medical stuff, all sorts of stuff, sort of wrapped up in a book by an expert, as we've heard. Anyway, that's it for today. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.